Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Here we go with the Friday edition of Sports Time Radio, and the snow has started in the Chicagoland area. Oh, wait, but I did say Friday.
Start spreading the news.
All right, you know that music means Schomburg Stew is here, and not only has Stew joined us for Friday, but many of you may not know this. Today is one of Schomburg Stew's ex-girlfriend's birthdays. So, of course, everyone here at Sports Time Radio would like to wish Betty White a happy birthday, not only on the part of Schomburg Stew, but on the part of everybody else here at Sports Time Radio. Stu, I hope you don't mind me leaking that secret from your younger days.
Yeah, I always liked Betty White, but sadly she is starting to slow down as she hits, what, 98?
Yes, 98 today. So,
98.
Yeah, you know,
she
unfortunately.
She always liked younger men, though.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, the relationship didn't work out, but Stu was able to find, you know, he's been married a very long time now, so he did okay. You don't have to worry about him. So.
Yeah, I'm. I think about my past.
You know, it's me you have to worry about, not Stu. Don't worry about him at all. But, all right, now, you know, I got to ask you this question because it's just – it drives me nuts when the media does this, and I just can't – you know, I'm guessing they just don't have anything else to write about, so they pull this kind of BS off. Now, you know, the NFL draft, of course, if you're not a fan of one of the four teams still remaining – all you have to look forward to is the NFL draft. Now, the Cincinnati Bengals have the first pick. And for some reason today, the media has kind of thrown out that should the Bengals trade the pick if they get a great offer? Now, they won't go into specifics on what a great offer is because, God forbid, they want to go out on that limb. But you would have to think if a team comes to them with multiple first-round picks and, you know, especially with the situation the Bengals are in, I get Burrow's a hometown guy and, you know, you can parade him out there, but it's stupid to not think that they wouldn't make this move if given, you know, the sweet deal that all these idiots are talking about, isn't it?
Well, you think it would be, but I take that grudgingly because I always wonder what this great deal is. If they don't specifically tell you what the great deal is, then I could disregard the rumor entirely.
Right. Well, you know, and that's the toughest thing with all of it is they want to run these stories out there, but they're not going to give you any information. So we're just kind of supposed to sit here and, you know, and guess and go, well, okay, what do they mean by, you know, I think one guy called it a Cadillac offer. What does that mean? I mean, you've got to give me some kind of specifics, not just throw out these stupid random, well, you know, if the deal's too good, you know, what if they get this great deal? Okay, well, what's the frickin' deal? So, yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I just want
know.
To punch these
let
guys
in
the face when they start talking about it.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand how they do it.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they're coming up with a story now when the playoffs are over the weekend and you think there'd be more important stories to talk about regarding the games on Sunday. But they're kind of – you would think a story like this would break after the season was over with, after the February Super Bowl. And maybe then they would start to talk about this in earnest.
Yeah, you know, and the oddest thing is, like, I haven't seen a Cincinnati writer talking about it. You know, it's all these national media guys who you would think would be paying attention to the final four teams. I mean, we do have conference semifinals going on. You know, I mean, if you're a football guy, I would like to think that your attention was turned there. But, yeah, I just don't – you know, it was like the other story today was somebody actually reported that, you know, Joe Burrow's dad said he'd be happy if the Bengals picked him. Is that really a story?
Not the way I'm looking at it. No, I'm wondering if the top player in the draft. I'm not sure who that's going to be just yet. But is that player going to be good enough to turn around the franchise after the season that Cincinnati had?
Yeah, and, you know, obviously they're a lot more than a quarterback away from being able to turn around the franchise. I mean, if Burrow is a decent quarterback, you know, they do have some pieces. Joe Mixon looks like a very good, you know, NFL running back. If A.J. Green could somehow, well, I guess you could throw Tyler Eifert in there too. You know, if A.J. Green could stay healthy and Tyler Eifert could stay healthy, they have some offensive weapons. You know, are they as good as the Ravens? I doubt it. Are they as good as the Steelers with a healthy Ben Roethlisberger? Probably not, but they would be an improved team. You know, could they compete with Cleveland, who's making, you know, a bunch of changes? Maybe. I don't know. We'll have to see what the Cleveland hype is next year. But, were they expecting Joe Burrow's dad to pull an Archie Manning, and, you know, like he did with Eli, and say, well, you know, the Chargers better not draft Eli because he won't go there? You know, were they expecting something like that, or, you know, again, did they just forget that we have conference semifinals going on?
I think they forgot about the conference finals now going on to worry about a story like that, and not a non-story. And I think that'll die down. This story is going to die down quickly, and maybe it'll be resurrected after the Super Bowl, and we'll see how much legs it has then.
Well, you know, after the Super Bowl, we got to start talking about the XFL. You know, we're not going to have time to talk about the NFL draft. It'll be XFL time. So,
hey, how many game season? Was it an eight game season for the XFL this time? Or?
Yeah, you know, I forgot, but there was a really interesting question brought up involving the XFL yesterday. And I kind of wanted to get your take on it because I thought it was a fantastic idea. You know, obviously this year, you know, it looks like Joe Burrow is going to be the number one pick. He's the best quarterback in the draft. Now next year, the Clemson quarterback, whose name is Trevor Lawrence, looks like he's going to enter the NFL draft. He'll be a junior, but he's rated right now as the top prospect. And if he came out, you know, right now, he would probably be the second quarterback taken off the board. Now, obviously, I don't know what he gets paid to play at Clemson. And again, don't tell me these guys don't get paid because I'm never going to believe that. But what would you think about him foregoing his junior year, playing in the XFL one season, and then entering the NFL draft where he could legitimately be paid, I heard somebody say up to $10 million. I don't think he's making that at Clemson.
No, maybe just a tenth of that. But I seriously doubt whether he would consider that kind of an offer from the XFL.
See, because to me, that sounds like a fantastic idea. You know, I mean, because if he goes to Clemson and say the off chance he gets hurt, like the kid from Alabama did, you know, Tua Tagovailoa, you know, I mean, then he slips in the draft and the money isn't quite there. You know, this way, if he goes to the XFL, you know, even if he gets hurt, he's already looking at a payday.
It's true, but I don't know how much of a payday it would be. And would the XFL actually explore that idea, knowing that he would be a one-and-done player for them and go to the NFL the following season?
Yeah, but, you know, wouldn't it be the big, you know, kind of hit or strike or, you know, however you want to look at it, even if it was just for the 1 year, you know, it would kind of give them, and, you know, it would probably help them draw some ratings, especially if he ended up with one of the teams, you know, in that area, you know, around Clemson.
Well, you know, that would happen. They would somehow work it out, so it would be one of those teams that he'd be playing for.
Right. So, and yet, looking at their schedule, it looks like it is a 10-game schedule.
Oh, all right.
With 2 weeks of playoffs. So yeah, it looks like, 12 weeks in total, and they'll be done by April 26th. So right around the time, I think Major League Baseball will just be started by then. So they go from February 8th until April 26th. So not bad.
Well, you're assuming that the league's going to make it through the first season.
Yeah, well, you know, I think they'll be okay because, you know, these teams have players we're going to know. You know, it's not going to be like the AF where we had absolutely no idea who some of these guys were. You know, I mean, these teams are going to have, you know, legitimate players that we've seen in the NFL. So, I think it gives them a much more viable chance of getting by.
Well, I'm looking for some good ratings the first few weeks, but look what happened to the AAF after those first 2 or 3 weeks. The ratings tanked, and they were gone after that.
Yeah, but that was bad football. You know, if you can give the people good, you know, or even in some cases just decent football, you can get them to watch because, you know, that fans are looking for that kind of stuff. You know, football has a really – You know, over-the-top fan base. And, I mean, you know, the World League was able to do it with good football. The USFL was able to do it with good football. You know, in reality, the USFL would probably still be in business if Donald Trump wasn't stupid enough to want to move the season to compete with the NFL.
Yeah, that was a pretty ridiculous idea on his part.
You know, I mean, because those guys were rolling and, you know, they had money to spend. I mean, you got to remember guys like Jim Kelly and Herschel Walker, you know, started off in the USFL because they were able to get big money offers. So, you know, it's viable if these teams can, you know, spend the money. And that's where I thought a guy, you know, again, even if it's just 1 year, a guy like Trevor Lawrence is a name, you know, there's some value to it, the football fans. You know, that guy walks in and there's a little bit of credibility added to your league because you're looking at a guy who's probably going to be playing on Sundays as long as he stays healthy, you know, for the next 10 years.
Yeah, it's true. I'm looking for higher scoring games. One of the things that hampered the AAF was their very low scoring games, if you remember, they had during their short existence.
You know, I mean, that was just, you know, I mean, that wasn't even Division I class college football. I don't think an AAF team could beat LSU or Clemson, who just played in the national championship game.
Or Ohio State or any of the top teams. I don't think that would happen.
Any of those top, you know, they might not even be able to beat a team that was in the top 25. That's just how that level of football was. And I understand what they were trying to do. You know, I mean, I think their ultimate goal was to get the NFL on board and have them be a feeder system. But yeah, it just, you know, unless you've got the NFL on board from the start, probably not going to work.
Yeah. I'm wondering if the fact that they faded so quickly will help the XFL.
Yeah, you know, just for the fact, again, that there is a little name value on the XFL teams. And, I mean, not like any of these guys were, you know, NFL Hall of Famers, but you're going to know the name on the back of the jersey when you see these guys. you know, and especially, you know, hardcore football fans are really going to know these guys. I know Dan and I were talking yesterday. They made a signing. They signed Antonio Callaway, who, you know, obviously isn't a huge NFL name, but as a rookie with the Cleveland Browns, he had a really solid year, got himself in trouble because he couldn't pass a drug test. But I actually had him on a fantasy team when he was a rookie. So, you know, you're going to get some of that. And, you know, my guess is out there, there's probably guys getting ready for XFL fantasy drafts. You know, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Now, they have secured a national TV deal.
Yeah. Yeah, their games will be on ESPN, Fox, and then the Fox channels that go with it, Fox Sports 1, Fox Sports 2. But the majority of the games will be on ESPN and Fox.
I'm wondering if the local teams will have their own outlet, or is it all going to just be nationally televised games?
You know, schedule-wise, it looks like it's just all national. But, you know, obviously, everybody gets ESPN and Fox. I know the majority of the people get, you know, Fox Sports 1. You know, when that there, and there's only, I think there's only one game on Fox Sports 2, so that's the only real questionable game that, you know, may not be in a mass television market. But yeah, they, you know, they look like they're going to be out there, and they're going to be set for, you know, some really good media exposure.
It'll be interesting, and if the quality of football, as you suggest, turns out to be of high quality for the first couple of games or two or three games, then I think they have a good chance of surviving and perhaps will at least go into the full season and beyond.
Yeah, you know, it just can't be as bad as the AAF was. You know, because
that
AAF football, it was difficult to watch. You know, I mean, I tried. I watched the first week, and you know, I watched a little of the second week, and by then I was done, and I would check in occasionally to see what was going on. But, you know, I didn't know any of those guys, and I didn't think any of them really showed the talent to even be NFL practice squad players at best. I think there was one receiver I really liked out of the entire league. So, you know, that's saying a lot. And, you know, we do wonder, we mentioned this a little bit yesterday. Do you think maybe they rushed the process because they wanted to get on TV before the XFL? Because if you remember, you know, Vince McMahon came out and immediately said, you know, well, we won't be debuting the league till 2020. So do you think maybe the good old AAF rushed it, figuring if they beat Vince on the TV, they had a better shot?
I think so. I definitely think they rushed it. When they heard that the 2020 start for the XFL, they wanted to get aboard quickly and maybe generate enough interest to get a good jump start on the XFL.
Yeah,
and be the dominant league.
It's really cool. They weren't financially stable. You know, that's obviously clear because they're out of business. So,
right. Now, didn't you mention that XFL has some innovative scoring ideas? They have some different to increase the scoring in the game. I remember they did some changes then. I'm wondering what they're doing for this time around.
Well, you know, like there is no extra points in the XFL. There are field goals, but there are no extra points. You can either – I'm trying to remember. I want to see – you know, I mentioned to you before my internet was giving me problems, but let me see if I can find the rule set up here on this. Here you go. I can tell you point after touchdown, as they describe it here, which I guess technically it is. But, yeah, there's a different – scoring system for the way you can do things here. You can go for 1 point from the 2 yard line, 2 points from the 5 yard line, or 3 points from the 10 yard line. So it'll, you know, it could keep teams in games. You know, I mean, imagine if you get down and you have a couple 9-point plays, you can get yourself back in the game, relatively quickly.
Yeah, that should be interesting. That's an interesting rule, and we'll see what kind of interest and scoring that generates when that happens.
So, yeah, you know, scoring-wise, I don't know if they have too many other rules that are going to pick up scoring, but, you know, like, you will see kickoff returns in this league because I believe they're kicking off from the 25-yard line. They do have that interesting thing they call the double forward pass, where if you throw the ball behind the line of scrimmage, even if the ball goes forward, the other player can still throw it. You know, in the NFL, if you throw the ball forward, I believe even if it's behind the line of scrimmage, he can't throw the ball. He's got to run with it.
That's right.
You know, that's relatively interesting. I believe they only have the 1 foot in bound rule, where, you know, the NFL, you need 2 feet down or something of, you know, that attempt. I believe here it's just a 1 foot down rule. What they did do interestingly with the punts, on a punt, you know, if the ball goes out of bounds inside the 35-yard line, it's what they call a major touchback. And the ball is actually spotted on the 35-yard line. So basically, they're taking out what the NFL calls corner kicks. Looking at these rules, punting is going to be really interesting. Because even here, if you punt the ball in the end zone or if it goes out of the end zone, the ball goes back to the 35-yard line. So it's going to be a lot of returns are going to be a vital part of the XFL game, both kickoff and punts. So we'll have to see how that works out.
That's interesting because in the old days, in the NFL, the kickoff returns and the punt returns are very exciting, but they seem to have gone away with that. Most kickoffs now go out of the end zone. No more exciting runbacks like the days of Devin Hester, even, which wasn't all that long ago.
You know, and obviously and this will be interesting to see if the XFL might have to deal with this. The NFL got rid of these, or basically legislated out, because of the concussion issues.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, we'll
there aren't any major issues. Now, they're not going to employ any Canadian Football League rules in which there are multiple backs in motion on a play.
No.
I assume.
No. It does look like the one thing, I guess you can say, they kind of adopted this from the NHL or even the MSL. Overtime will consist of what they call 5 rounds. And what they'll do is a team gets the ball on the 5-yard line, and the offensive team has 1 play to score. Then the team with the most points after those 5 rounds wins the game. So it's very shootout style, kind of like the NHL. So
yeah, that's pretty interesting. That should be quite interesting. See how that plays out. Now, are the fans going to be amenable to these new rule changes in terms of scoring, you think?
Boy, you know, you think if it gives them a lot of offense, they will, won't it?
Yeah, maybe even too much, but we'll see. The shootouts seem to help in the hockey.
Yeah, and, you know, then the other thing they're going to do, you know, one thing I hear a lot of complaints about the NFL, they're going to have a running game clock. You know, even after interceptions and out-of-bounds plays, the game will continue to run. So we're not going to get these 3.5- and 4-hour games like the NFL. The only time that's different is the last 2 minutes of each half.
And what about an incomplete pass? Does that stop the clock as it does in the NFL?
No, it will continue to run. Unless it's inside the last 2 minutes. It says here, outside of the last 2 minutes of each half, The game clock will run after incompletions and out of bounds plays. My guess is it will stop for penalties, because you kind of need to get that situation. And even here in their briefing, it says they're aiming to get each game under 3 hours,
which I think
is a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. I've often wondered why the clock stops on an incomplete pass, which has kind of always been that way, it seems to me. But ask yourself why. Why would it stop on an incomplete pass but not on a running player?
So, yeah, and then, you know, a couple other things to help speed up the game. Each team only gets 2 timeouts per half instead of 3, so that'll help it a little. And then there's no coaches' challenges. You don't have to deal with the coach throwing the flag on the field and the delays there. All the replays are subject to be reviewed by the replay official, who will actually have a booth above the field, as they're saying here. So that should speed up the game as well, because, you know, the part of the problem with the NFL is, you know, when a team is considering replaying, they stand around until somebody can actually see the replay, and then they decide. So this should help speed up the game as well. So, yeah, it looks like a lot of rules dedicated to speeding up the game, which is, if they work out, will be a good thing.
I think that if these things are implemented properly, the game's going to be over in 2.5 hours, well within 3 hours, which is good.
Yeah, definitely. And this is another thing I really like, and I wish the NFL would adopt this. You know, in college in the NFL, you have 7 officials. The XFL actually has added an 8th official whose only job is to spot the football and get it spotted quickly so the game can move along. So I'm interested to see how that works out, because that could really help the game as well when you don't have 3 officials standing around going, okay, well, where does the ball go? Was it here? Was it here? How does it work out? If you've got one guy whose job it is, it may make things go a little quicker.
I can think of one potential flaw with this system. How are the advertisers going to adjust to that? Are they going to be upset? Or will there be maybe a TV timeout like there is in hockey throughout the course of the game?
I guess the new thing now is the split screen, you know, where the action keeps going and you get the commercial on the side. So maybe we'll get more of that.
Yeah, I don't think the fans would like that too much.
Well, you know, as long as they don't do it too often and they pick the right times to do it. You know, obviously you don't want to do it while a team is down on the goal line or something, or, you know, trying for a 3-point extra point from the 10-yard line. But, you know, if it's spaced out correctly, that could be useful for them.
If as you pointed out, if it's not in a critical part of the game, it might work.
Yeah. And a lot of this, you know, is going to be kind of hit or miss for them the first year, and that'll be the big key, is can they get through it? And, you know, they can always make the adjustments next season, or, you know, how it goes, what worked, what didn't work, what did they think of this or that. So we'll see, but, you know, they've got some interesting stuff, and I mean, I'll take a look at it when it starts off.
Yeah. The first 2 or 3 weeks, I think most people will, most football fans are going to look at it and see how it is, and who knows, maybe we'll actually enjoy this incarnation of the XFL. How many teams, by the way, do they have this time?
There are 8 teams to start. It's Dallas, D.C., Houston, Los Angeles, New York, St. Louis, Seattle, and Tampa Bay.
A lot of warm cities in there, warm.
Yeah. And I believe the New York team is actually playing in New York. It's not where the New York teams actually play in New Jersey.
Okay.
I'll have to double that, but I believe, yeah, that they're actually playing in their games in New York. So I don't know where the stadiums are or anything like that, so that's something we'll have to see how it goes. But
it'll also be interesting to see what kind of live attendance they get.
Yeah, that'll be the big key as well, is how many people are going to games, and who or what will show up. So we'll see. It does look like single game tickets are reasonably priced, $30 a game. That's not terrible for a starting point. I'm assuming the $30 ticket isn't in the best seats, but still not a terrible, terrible option. Yeah, it looks like tickets go from $30 to $138. That's for the New York team. I'm on their website. I don't know if prices are different by other teams. Let me see if there's a different ticket price for, say, like here. I'll click on the Seattle team, and we'll see what we get for ticket prices here. Come on. That's not what I wanted. I don't want you to email me tickets to their, I just want to know what ticket prices are. So I don't need to join their emailing list. I get enough stuff that works out that way.
Well, you hop on a plane and go to Seattle and see a game.
Yeah. So, I ended up on the Dallas team. Their lower level seats actually start at $20 a game. So they don't quite have the breakdown like New York has on what the top level is. They want you to reach out to them to find that out. But yeah, you can get tickets here for $20 a game. Again, obviously it's the cheap seats. It is in the lower level at Dallas. I believe for New York it was in the upper level. So, it looks like ticket prices are just going to depend on where you live.
It would really help the league if they actually had a decent attendance, because that certainly enhances the excitement of a game when there's a big crowd watching. But, of course, I'm wondering if the attendance is low, would they do some creative camera work so that it appears that the stadium is fuller than it actually is?
Yeah, well, they'll probably have to. It's not like the teams are going to sell out, depending how it goes. But, if you look at it, if you could go and get a $20 ticket, it might be worth some people just going, hey, all right, well, let's check it out for a week and see how it goes. If they like it, maybe they come back.
Yeah, and that they're doing it, of course, at a good time, and there's not much interest in the NBA just yet, and hockey has never been a big draw on national TV, so maybe they will do well and get a nice fan base watching on TV at least, and they'll be going from there.
So yeah, it's possible. We'll see how it goes, but it's so weird to never know what people like. They go from, oh, this is the greatest thing in the world, to yeah, this stinks and I'm never going to see it again. So
yeah,
we know how that stuff goes, right?
Any truth to the rumor that Jesse Ventura and Jerry Lawler will be the two key announcers for the XFL?
Yeah, no, not this time. No Jim Ross, none of that stuff. They've actually got actual general football announcers. So
yeah, which is a very smart move. I was being facetious, of course. And I wonder if that hurt them the first time when they had the Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross doing the commentary.
Not so much Ross, because he called it like an actual football game, and I believe he had some experience calling football games. But the other guys, they had no business there. They have no reason for that. So, but all right, while we are on football, we're going to knock this out of the way here, even though we're only a little over halfway through the podcast. We have our two games this weekend. We mentioned them a little bit, didn't go into too much detail. I can tell you that you got 3 out of 4 right last week, even though that Kansas City game got a little iffy to start, you know, they came back and helped you out. So you're 5-3 in the playoffs so far. Overall, you're a whopping 78-35 on the picks I've made you make. This week we start off both games on Sunday, but at later times. We got Tennessee at Kansas City with a 2:05 kickoff. Are you buying the Titans' roll here? You got the continue upset, or does it end in Kansas City on Sunday?
They have been on a roll, but I will have to go with Kansas City to win at home. And Tennessee was very fortunate to win the last game. They got a lot of bad breaks when their opponent self-destructed. So I think didn't Tennessee beat Kansas City earlier this season?
Yes, they did, at home by 3 points. But it was Mahomes'
right.
First game back from his injury.
Right. Oh. So I will have to say that Kansas City should have no problem closing out this one.
And then the later game, of course, we have the NFC side of it, is the Green Bay Packers at the San Francisco 49ers. Now, these two teams played earlier in the year, too, in San Francisco. And if you remember, Green Bay went out there and just got waxed. So can they recover and get a win, or you got San Francisco going to the Super Bowl?
I don't know. I don't do this very often, but I'm going to go out on a flyer here, and I'm going to pick the Green Bay Packers to win in an upset.
Ooh, all right. So we'll have to, I don't know how many Bears fans listen, but remember that's Schomburg Stew, not me. So go after him. So, oh.
All right. And don't put too much money in what I'm predicting. It's just one of my infrequent hunches that I suspect an upset will happen during that game.
Well, you know, to be fair, I mean, you know, you're 5-3. If you were gambling money, you would be up. So, you know, not terrible. You know, look at this way. You're doing a lot better than I am with my fantasy playoff team. I only have George Kittle and Tyreek Hill left. And I think if they both score 5 touchdowns this week and then play each other in the Super Bowl and score 5 more touchdowns, I could actually get some money back.
Well, that's unlikely to happen, but you're still not out of the running yet.
No, I haven't been officially eliminated. I mean, I guess technically I still have players, but currently I stand in 11th place out of 12 teams. And I kind of knew this was going to happen when I was picking 12th. I knew I was going to be buried down here. There's just no way you can make it up. And the worst part about this is the first email they sent out had me picking first, and I was really excited about it. And then they sent out another email saying that they actually posted it in reverse order. So I basically the shaft there.
Hey, it sounds to me like a fix was in on that one.
Yeah, well, you know, there's always been some odd moves in this league, but to be fair, you know, Mr. Fantasy has a team as well, and he got the second pick. So, you know, the negative, of course, was he's missing most of his guys. He has the Kansas City running back Damian Williams left, and then Green Bay's defense is all he's got left. So it has not been a stellar offseason for us.
No. No, it hasn't worked out so far.
Yeah.
Of course, you're predicting San Francisco to win the game Sunday, I would assume, right?
Well, you know, if I'm going to have any shot to win any money, I need San Francisco and Kansas City to advance. You know, even so, at this point, it's not going to matter to me. It's just as far out of the running as I am. I would love to see it end up Tennessee and Green Bay. I think that would be hilarious.
That would be funny,
so,
wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I would assume that Kansas City is a bigger favorite to win than San Francisco is against Green Bay.
Yeah,
I didn't see
the Kansas City line. I know San Francisco is a 7.5-point favorite, I believe, as of today. I'm not sure what the Chiefs line is. Let me see if I can, you know, again, like I said, my internet is running at dial-up speed here, so let me see if I can actually get it to work here for me. I'm just more happy that we're actually still on the air and I'm not dealing with that BS. I'm a little surprised, by the way,
about that high point number for in that San Francisco Green Bay game. I didn't think it would be nearly that high.
No, neither did I. But you know, it's a starting point, and then you know, as the money comes in, you know, things are adjusted. But yeah, that's you know, I would, you know, if it was 7, I would probably be a little more comfortable with it. But to be honest, if I was betting money, I would take Green Bay in 7.5, even though,
yeah,
like I said, they did get
lot.
The spread played out there. So
yeah, that's another reason why I picked them to win on an upset, because I just don't see them losing that dominantly again this Sunday.
Yeah, well, you know, and it's, you know, there's some interesting things going on when, you know, you look at it. I mean, it's, you know, the veteran Aaron Rodgers, who's won a Super Bowl, you know, against the guy, the quarterback making just his second playoff start. All right, here you go. The spread has Kansas City favored by 7 points, and the over-under for the game is 53.
Yeah, that's a pretty high number, isn't it, for the over-under?
Yeah, especially for a team like Tennessee that likes to run the football.
Yeah, that's quite a high number to me.
So yeah, and just double checking. Yeah, it still is San Francisco by 7.5, and the over-under on this game is only 46.5. So.
That's a little more reasonable.
You know, yeah, that's, you know, I think that would probably be a nice over bet there, you know.
Yeah, I would think so.
So, but all right, you know, we've had all kinds of just weird, strange, odd baseball stories this week, and I would love to get your take on it. We've seen a general manager and a manager suspended for a year and then fired by their team. You know, that was the Astros. The Red Sox fired Alex Cora, who was involved in both the Astros scandal and the Red Sox sign-stealing scandal. And then yesterday, the Mets decided to part ways with Carlos Beltran, who they just hired as their manager November 1st. What's your take on this fiasco, and are you buying this as being worse than the steroid deal, as a lot of people are saying now?
It may very well be worse than the steroid deal, because when they're cheating to affect the outcome of a game, that really goes against baseball, as far as I'm concerned. Now, it's a time-honored tradition, of course, and sign-stealing is okay, but not by mechanical means, as what has been done with Houston and Boston. That has no business in baseball at all, and that really, to me, destroys the integrity of the game.
So, yeah, and, that's the tough part with this. I mean, if you can stand out on second base and you can pick up a sign, that's great. That's the team's fault for being bad at hiding what they're doing. But when you go back into your locker room and you pull up a videotape and, you know, you go through all this and then you're able to use it to decipher what's going on, that's garbage.
And why aren't some players being fined or suspended because of this? Because they did mention a few players who were hitting the baseball bat on the garbage pail and various other things that happened to steal the signs.
Yeah, well, the only player named in the actual report was Carlos Beltran. The difficult part, of course, with punishing a player is the union, because you've got to be able to work out whatever punishment you're going to give this player with the union. And you know there's no way the union is going to go for a big-time suspension. I mean, if you come to them and you say, we want to suspend this guy for a year, they're not going to go for that. And then depending on how many Astros were involved, they may not be able to field a team.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. And you know, I was kind of amused when I read these stories this week and the mechanical aspects of the findings and what they did to steal the signs, as if it's a unique situation to the modern era, when, in fact, and I think I mentioned this before, in 1951, when the Giants beat the Brooklyn Dodgers 5-4 on a 3-run walk-off homer by Bobby Thompson, to this day, there has been speculation that they were stealing signs through the scoreboard.
Yeah.
So it's not unique. It's not unique. And that story has not gone away. That story has never gone away, even though it's 69 years old.
Yeah, there was a big blow up, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, with the White Sox and the Tigers. Chris Sale was flat out convinced that the Tigers had somebody sitting in center field behind the fence with binoculars looking in to steal signs. And it actually turned into, I believe it was multiple bench-clearing incidents because Sale started throwing at hitters.
But there was never really proof one way or the other that he was correct.
It was how it is with the usual BS, you know, a bunch of denial and, you know, just like with the Bobby Thompson thing, there's no way to prove that. You know, guys are working in the scoreboard all the time, making changes, whatever they've got to do. You know, guys are behind the fence all the time doing work or picking up whatever or, you know, setting up something for a bullpen guy. You know, unless you can get them standing there with the binoculars or peeking out the scoreboard to do whatever they're doing, it's just not going to happen. So.
Yeah, and I assume they're not going to have any kind of an asterisk for the Astros and the Red Sox, though, are they?
Major League Baseball hasn't mentioned it, but there are a lot of buildup now to do something. I don't know what that'll be or how it will turn out, but there's a lot of push to see something done. So maybe.
You think they could actually get to the stage where they would take the World Series title from Houston and give it to the Dodgers?
Well, you know, in both cases, you'd be giving it to the Dodgers, 2017 and 2018.
That's right.
I don't think it will ever come to that. I wouldn't be surprised to see the asterisks added and kind of let the fans decide for themselves.
And if I were the Dodgers, though, especially the management, I would really be upset about these things that just came out about what their opponents did. That really hurts the game of baseball.
Oh, yeah. I would be completely livid, especially if I'm a Dodger or one of their fans, because, you know, like I understand, you know, there's some, you know, some Yankees are upset because in 2017 they lost to the Astros, but you know, there was no guarantee you would get to the World Series. You know, maybe you would have beaten the Astros, but would you have won the ALCS? You know, we don't know that. The Dodgers were actually in the damn World Series.
Yeah. Has Yu Darvish ever claimed that they were stealing signs? Didn't he mention at one time that he thought they were stealing signs during the World Series?
You know, I don't know if he ever went that far. The Astros claim that he was tipping pitches, and that's why they were able to have so much success against him. But now you've got to wonder, right? I mean, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
That cost him a lot. You know, part of the reason he decided to leave the Dodgers and sign with the Cubs is because his kids were being bullied at school for the way he pitched.
Yeah, that's carrying it too far. But he may have a legitimate claim now about what happened. I'm sure. He's thinking about it a little bit more seriously than he did before. Maybe he wasn't tipping his fitness.
Yeah, I mean, just one of those things. Yeah, you know, if I'm a Dodger or their front office personnel, you know, I'm sitting there looking at those National League championship flags wondering if maybe they should be World Series championships instead.
Yeah. Well, I'm certainly glad that the Cubs, at least nothing has been directed towards the Cubs regarding their 2016 win. Well, think about the scoreboard.
You know,
they have the old-fashioned scoreboard, right? If they could, anybody could steal a sign illegally, they could do it.
Well, you know, and then you know, looking at the Dodgers even more, one of the bad reps on Clayton Kershaw, while he's been probably the best pitcher of his era, was that he's not good in the postseason. Well, now you've got to kind of like the Yu Darvish thing. How much did stealing his signs contribute to his reputation now?
Exactly. That's right.
So, yeah, I mean, there's just so many, you know, questions when it comes to this and, you know, what should baseball do? How should baseball handle it? You know, I think so far they've done a really good job. I would like to see international pool money taken away from these teams as well, just besides the draft picks. But they didn't do that with the Astros. Maybe they'll do it with the Red Sox because, you know, the Red Sox had this happen before with an app. They did the Apple Watch thing, you know, and when John Farrell was the manager. So this is the second time they've been caught.
I wonder what their fan base thinks about this. You think their attendance will go down? I don't see it going down in Boston, but I'm wondering if it will go down a little bit in Houston.
Yeah, it would definitely have a bigger effect on Houston than Boston. I mean, you know, I guarantee you there are Boston fans out there who don't believe this even happened. You know, with the way their fan base is, you know, oh, no, they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't need to do that. There's no way they did that. You know, even though there's apparently proof. You know, that's just how loyal, you know, it's very similar to the Cubs fan base, loyal, over the top, and just, let's face it, nuts. You know, just insane.
Yeah.
So.
I heard that some Boston Red Sox fans don't think that man walked on the moon either.
Right. You know, it's just one of those fun things. So, we'll see. But I'm interested to see what their penalty will be because that, that investigation is just about, you know, over. So, you know, I'm assuming they're going to get at least what the Astros got, if not more.
Yeah, you would think so. And do these managers come back to baseball? Are they going to be blackballed?
Yeah, that's going to be a very tough question to decide. You know what I mean? Especially for a guy like Carlos Beltran, who never got a shot to manage.
No.
I mean, he's been high on a list for a long time. Baseball hasn't banned him. They haven't put any issues on him. You know, the Mets just cut him loose. Otherwise, this would have hung over their head the entire time. And you do wonder,
sure.
You know, if you hire an A.J. Hinch or an Alex Cora or a Beltran and your team wins, will there be questions?
There might be some underlying suspicion now. That's for sure.
You know, because that would be my first thing. Oh, great. Well, you know, look, so-and-so got hired here. And, well, hey, look, this team is winning now. Wait, what's going on?
Yeah.
So.
I thought, by the way, it was amusing to hear from Pete Rose regarding the cheating incident.
So, yeah, it is kind of odd. I mean, is this really anything worse than what he did?
Yeah, he claims, of course, he admitted betting, but he said he always bet on his team to win.
Yeah, I'm sure. Again, obviously, we have no way to prove that, but at least that's what he's going with. So
that's what
story, Pete.
Claims. Yeah, that's what he claims.
Yeah.
And boy, if they ever found out that he was betting against his team, that would be the all-time scandal.
But yeah, the other interesting thing here is, on such short notice like that, I mean, spring training is about a month away. These teams have got to find managers. And the one thing I did notice is it seems to be veteran names that keep popping up. It's the Dusty Bakers, it's the Buck Showalters.
Right.
It's those guys with a lot of experience. And I think that makes sense because, they're going to have to handle a lot of BS from the media once this gets all started. So.
No, these guys aren't youngsters, though. So do you want to really have them as your manager? Would it just be a one-and-done situation before they went out and get somebody younger?
Yeah, I think that would be the big question would be how long would you have them in as your manager? I mean, are they going to get, a year just to kind of hold serve while, you're looking
exactly
for the actual guy? Or are you going to go out and get, the guy you want to keep long term?
Yeah, that being said, would Dusty or Showalter ask for a multi-year contract if they want to
manage
the team?
You would think, right? I mean, if they're going to, kind of bring you in, you would want a little security, right? I mean, not just the
exactly
1 year deal.
Right, exactly. So that'll be interesting. And as you pointed out, hey, spring training isn't that far away. What, 6 weeks away? Roughly?
Yeah.
So they're going to have to make a decision pretty soon. Yeah, they're going to have to make a decision pretty darn soon.
But, yeah, we'll have to see who gets these jobs. And, I mean, there's a lot of names floating out there. Not a huge amount of crossover, but there's, a lot of, just a lot of guys here and there are like, okay, well, who's this? And I believe Buck Showalter is already interviewed with the Astros.
Well, that would be an interesting selection.
Yeah. So, it just depends on who they go with. And I know, like a couple of the interesting names, there was that Joe Espada who interviewed All Around Baseball, this year for quite a few of the managerial openings, didn't end up getting the job. He's still the Astros bench coach. And then there's Ron Renicki, who's the Red Sox bench coach. The problem with this is Espada was on the Astros coaching staff in 2017, and Renicki was on the Red Sox coaching staff in 2018. Can you, even though these guys weren't moved, can you go to them?
I don't think you can. I don't think it's a cliche, but guilt by association, I'm afraid.
Right. That was kind of my hang-up with it was, just the bombardment of being, well, you were here. What happened? I mean, over and over, because that's all the media is going to ask them. It's not going to be anything about baseball.
No, that's why I don't think those guys will be selected, either one of them.
Yeah, it just kind of how it goes. Yeah, look at that. We're done already. That went kind of quick.
Quick.
All right. How did you and I take off? Back on Monday at 5:30, and all the games going to watch the movie over the weekend. Look for the new blog over tomorrow morning. Get the link, follow me to the Facebook page, and give that a like. Don't forget to Twitter feed, of course, is at Sports Time Radio. You can find me on Twitter as well. I am at Sports Time, TwitterTime.com/TIME. Remember, who has the Chiefs and Packers in it this weekend?
And if you look the podcast live, you know what to do. Come on to the tuning.com and hey, go listen anytime you want.